Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, so we lurch into the deep catacomb of the final international snooze fest of this year in different spirits this week, with some celebrating a successful four-week stint between the breaks and others, like perhaps me, smashing all kinds of breaking case of emergency glasses to try to pull themselves out of a constipated malaise. Now, Anthony, this week is currently doing exams, isn't he, Nick? So it's an old school two-man pod for us this time around. Nick, you're right. It feels very retro, doesn't it? Just you and me.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, it's back to the original pairing, how it all began three or so years ago. But yeah, we are Who Got the Assist. Make sure to give us a follow on Twitter or Instagram. If you haven't already, we're on Insta at WGTA.FPL. Twitter, you can find us WGTA_FPL or WGTA_Nick. And if you want to join our league, the league code is CPSULF. So on the pod this week, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at what we've learned this season. And how we're going to do that is by looking back at what we thought we knew at the start of the last international break, game week 4, and updating that, plus providing some thoughts on how this might change going forward. Our correspondence this week is on defences, and we also have the Q&A, of course. But first, as always, it's the game week review. So, Tom, would you like to go first, perhaps?
It wasn't a disaster by any stretch of the imagination, but like it was just a very disappointing week, because it was the third week in a row that I got between 50 and 60, 57 this week. Did get the captaincy right in Kane, so I've stopped the rot in terms of arm blanks. But I mean, really, apart from Kane, the only differential performer I had was Che Adams, who got 7 points. I guess maybe McCarthy as well. But elsewhere, there were blanks, so TAA, Reece James, Luke Ayling, Son, James and Jimmy. And the other two players that I had that did return, everyone owns anyway in Salah and Grealish. And I guess this week I did roll my transfer. I was planning to just go into international break, 2 frees, and try to sort things out. But it became a bit apparent to me this week that I think my around the edges players aren't quite good enough, so I may have wildcarded. What about you, Nick? How did you do?
Ooh, the wildcard, that's interesting. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second, but yeah, it was a good one actually for me, as always. Back to the usual swing of things. I got 76 points, so yeah, pretty happy with that. Just one of those weeks, I guess, where the 50-50 calls went the right way for a change. So like, for instance, on the Friday night, I was trying to decide between Dallas and Kyle Walker-Peters for a little while, and I switched over to Kyle Walker-Peters last minute just because of Southampton's seemed a little bit better defensively going this season, so I thought I'll back him. And yeah, that was a 9-point swing, so that's pretty good. Sort of going for Kane, I guess, over the Son for the captaincy as well, another 50-50 call, I guess, sort of worked out, so that's another net 6 points. So it's very nice to see those 50-50 calls go right for a change. But yeah, it was just a really good week. Only two players actually blanked for me this game week, which was Zuma and Son. Everyone else got returns. On the Friday night, started off pretty nicely with Adams, Walker-Peters and Lamptey, and then Sasse. We got Zaha and Calvert-Lewin sort of, you know, doing a little bit of business. And then on the Sunday, we had Grealish and Martinez and, of course, Captain Kane and Salah as well. So, yeah, generally pretty happy with how everything worked out. Good score again, so that's nice to see. But Tom, so why are you wildcarding?
Well, I mean, I had planned to keep it until game week 16, and I guess that was always high in mind of what I wanted to do. But my performance really doesn't merit it, basically. And I'm gambling that my net games over the next 7 to 8 weeks will be better than the gain I would have got if I held my wild card. Like, I've maintained throughout that I'd love to hold my wild card to 16, but I'm not going to do it at the expense of, you know, getting there with poor rank, hoping for a miracle for my wild card. So basically, my team's pretty stale. I've had 50s for the last 3 weeks. I had 68 in that came week, you know, the first one back, when everyone else, like yourself, got 80 plus from their own wild cards. And I don't deny my team doesn't look that bad on paper, but the last 8 weeks speak for themselves, really. I've been 1.5 million for the last 4 weeks, and I feel like I need to make a change, really. There are some things I am going to have to do. So I'm lacking some hygiene players that others will have got bailed out by this week, the likes of Chilwell, a Villa defender, DCL, I'm probably going to have to buy. Those things are going to have to be a bedrock of the team going forward. And I want to just get them into place. I had a lot of deadwood and stuff I wanted to move on. And I just couldn't get there, basically, outside of the two free transfers I had earmarked to jump into, you know, fixture swings. So it's not an entirely defensive wildcard. It does sound really defensive. It really isn't. It's just that I do want to cover some bases going into Christmas. I'd need a huge hit otherwise. And basically, I'm hoping that if I do kind of jump on these fixture swings for obviously the likes of Man United, City, and the likes of Vardy as well, I'd be able to just kind of reshape my team in something which is a little bit ahead of the curve. And yeah, hopefully climb the ranks, just because, I mean, for everyone, it's different, right? And I had a usual passage of people when I put my team up going, I don't know why wildcard, is that what you're doing? But, you know, after 3 or 4 weeks, just average scores, you know, something's got to change. It should show you that something's not quite right. But sometimes it's worth taking action, especially if, you know, you've been doing the same method for the last few weeks of just being patient, making obvious moves, blah blah blah, and it's just not resulted how you wanted it to. So yeah, that's why I'm wildcarding.
Fair enough. I think it's probably an element there of, you know, your original plan, I guess, was to try and see if you could get to game week 16 without wildcarding and use it to your advantage there. But if it got to the situation where you'd be sitting 100 plus points behind, you know, some of your rivals like myself, obviously that's the situation where, you know, if it carried on, I was getting 70 points, you're getting 50 points. You start talking about sort of sunk cost fallacy as well, where you're just like holding on to the wild card just because you said you would, and you've got this plan in motion, but you know, there's no point hanging on, I guess, if you feel like you're, seasons being derailed a little bit and you've got these guys that, you know, you want to cover like Chilwell and the Villa defence and some of the other players you mentioned, as like Bruno coming in as well.
Obviously, I was getting to the point as well where I couldn't afford all of these players to fit into one team eventually, especially if I was trying to do some sort of piecemeal two free transfers roll thing to try to sort everything out. And it just got to the point I had too many fires, too much to do. And I pulled it on Saturday night, actually. I won't go through what team I've got because obviously it will change in the next couple of weeks, but I'll mention a few things about this pod on where I may be. Right, let's move on with the pod swiftly. Enough about me. Talk about the market forces, Nick. Obviously, the last weekend before international breaks, so some managers, I guess, dipping into the market, getting everything sorted before they have 2 weeks off?
Yeah, it's been pretty busy, I guess, without the Monday night fixtures. A lot of people perhaps, you know, making their move straight away after Sunday night. But yeah, as you said, 2 weeks into our next Premier League game. So still quite a while before we see the Premier League start again. But doesn't matter for some managers, lots of moves happening. And top of the table, I guess, is Hakim Ziyech. Played 2 games now for Chelsea, or started 2 games rather, and he's had a really, really good start. Goal and assist against Burnley, and now 2 assists against Sheffield United, and he was really, really impressive in that game as well. I was particularly impressed, and 260,000 transfers in, and obviously Chelsea have Newcastle up next. I know he's a player as well that you were looking at on your wild card.
Yeah, we've got some good data on him later on, but yeah, a player that I felt would have a positive impact as a catalytic sort of player for Chelsea, and so it seems to have proved in the very early days. Also the case for Man in second, right?
Yep, so that is Bruno Fernandes, 180,000 transfers in currently at time of recording for him, and obviously, yep, great performance again for him against Everton this week, 17 points that he scored in total with his 2 goals and 1 assist, so excellent haul there, and he had 6 shots as well in that game, which was most amongst all players for this game week, so, you know, really, really impressive performance there. And West Brom at home next, so even a potential captaincy option for many managers. Looks like a nice plan fixture. Manchester United's fixture is starting to improve, so lots of people looking at perhaps Son to Bruno. And yeah, I mean, in terms of transfers out, Son is there. He's the fifth most transferred out player, 117,000 transfers out. You know, it's a couple of blanks for him. And Spurs fixtures are getting really, really tough in the short term. We'll be talking about that a little bit later, but they've got City, Chelsea and Arsenal up next. Otherwise, I guess it's kind of the injured gang. Danny Ings, most transferred out player, 150,000 transfers out for him. Trent's also, it's been declared tonight that he's going to be out for a month. So I expect that number of transfers out to rise for him. He's been 150,000 so far, but yeah, I mean, a lot of managers probably looking for an excuse to get rid of him anyway. And Sison Mitchell also being transferred out. But yeah, in terms of the defenders, it's Chilwell, who you mentioned. He's the guy being brought in heavily. Very, very impressive so far for Chelsea. Picking up a nice goal against Sheffield United. So yeah, that's another return for him. And he's another one on your wild card. Grealish also been heavily transferred in for those that don't own him. And also Vestergaard from Southampton, apparently catching a few people's eye. 130,000 transfers in for him. I remember last season he was doing particularly well, wasn't he? Exactly. And he's died again this year.
Last year, he was the first defender to rise, I think, just because he got a goal really early on and went all the way up to 5.2. So it was 5.0 last year. All that's 5.2, you know, like the Ward situation where everybody just saw he was doing very well one year for Burnley. I think got a lucky goal, lucky assist, and people kind of flew on him and he went all the way up to 5.3 or something like that. I'm sure you own that guy, Ward. Wardinho.
Yep, Stephen Ward.
Oh, what a legend.
Yeah, it seems he's doing that this season with his consistent returns. He's already got two goals, apparently. So lots of people on Janik.
Don't need to panic if you've got Janik. Right, okay, let's move on then to the main thrust of this week's pod. And it is basically updating you on what's been going on this season. What can we tell after 8 FPL game weeks? So in game week 4, we looked at a few things. We looked at what had happened and we chose kind of nominated individuals and teams for each of the following sort of quasi-titles. So team so far, the three top performers we each nominated three, the star so far, the surprise so far, and the flop so far. What we're going to do is go back, and I listened to us on chipmunk mode earlier on today, and look back at what we said and see if that continued and offer some ideas of if we still say the same thing now, or you know, whether things have changed. And maybe, as Nick mentioned at the start, give some indication of whether we think these trends are going to continue. So the first thing, obviously, is the team so far. And 4 weeks ago, we've kind of all agreed on Everton, because obviously they were, you know, quick out of the blocks, weren't they, Nick? They were the guys who absolutely smashed it. And I also said Spurs and got widely pilloried by the two of you. Anthony in particular, he's not here so he can't defend himself, said I was over-focusing on two good games. I now feel very smug and feel like I was kind of right here, because Spurs went on to win 4 out of 4. Son scored 29 points, admittedly 2 holes in one game, 2 blanks in that too. And Kane scored 36 in 4. But Everton were the ones we all really loved.
Yeah, I'll start with Spurs very briefly. I'm actually thinking that their first 4 fixtures were better than their last 4, technically, just in terms of how they played. But I certainly don't feel like I should be pillorying you right now, just because they've at least been relatively consistent in their performances compared to Everton, who me and Stag picked, who have been pretty dire since that last pod. So they've lost 3 and drawn 1, of course. You know, a few caveats, like Richarlison got suspended in game week 5. Rodriguez, he got injured. Luke Dean got sent off in a game. It's only really been Calvert-Lewin who's had this sort of steady trickle of points, hasn't he? But nothing amazing in terms of returns. In the last 4, for instance, he's actually been outscored by Wilson, Watkins, Adams and Bamford. So not too great from the Everton assets since our last pod. Perhaps I wouldn't be calling them out again this game week, but you know, we're not talking about sell, because they do have Fulham up next.
Now, I know what you mean, Everton, Nick. I mean, they were everyone's darlings, as you mentioned. Lost 3 on the bounce now, which is absolutely amazing, really. It's like coming to the feet, Southampton, Newcastle, Man United. And I did look at the numbers, and the drop-off has just been pretty huge for Everton. It's obviously all those factors you listed, Nick. So in the first 4 game weeks, they scored 12 goals, 9 assists. In the latter 4 game weeks, game weeks 5 to 8, they've only scored 4 goals and 2 assists. Their XG was 8.7 in the first four game weeks. In the last four, it's been 3.46. So it's been a huge drop off in terms of attempts, chances conceded, defending. At the back, they've conceded the most shots in the box. They've also conceded the second most big chance. They've conceded more than the likes of Fulham and West Brom. And you know, there's loads of different reasons. Richarlison's loss being big, Iwobi and Bernard not up to the task, and James as well. An XGI of 2.72 in the first four, just 0.89 in the last four. So a lot of his key metrics, like chance creation and chance frequency, halved. It's not been very good at all. Looking forward though, Nick, I mean, you know, the top four reads Leicester, Spurs, Liverpool and Southampton. What do you think the team is now in terms of the team of the season so far? If we're now writing off Everton, we're not too sure about Spurs, as you've mentioned.
So I think Leicester probably do need a little bit of a shout out just because of their performances, the fact they are top of the league. There's been a few FPL players that have impressed, I guess, like some Justin, Castagne and Vardy, though none of their assets have really broken that template, have they? Which is actually quite interesting. So even though they're doing well in terms of league performance, perhaps they haven't really caught our eye on a major basis in terms of FPL, and we haven't really been too threatened by them. I'm actually just looking at their ownership, and you know, I guess sort of Justin is their most owned player right now, 21.9%. So it's not particularly high ownership. And you know, the top teams, they have been pretty subpar, City and Liverpool and United. I mean, Spurs have been excellent so far this season with Son and Kane, but I feel like the team I want to give it to actually is Aston Villa. And that's not necessarily because I think they're the best team in the league or the team that perhaps played the best, but I just feel like, you know, they deserve it because of what they've done so far. They've really exceeded expectations. They've only played seven games, so that's perhaps why they're not in that top four. If they did play the next game, they'd jump up right to the top. But, you know, five of those games they've won, including victories against likes of Arsenal, Leicester and Liverpool, which you wouldn't have expected. I mean, their defence has been pretty decent. They've got four clean sheets, which are joint best in the league. Their midfield and forward line has been vastly improved, and that's part of the work that they've done in the transfer window. You know, bringing in the likes of Martinez in goal, Watkins, new right back as well in Cash, who's been pretty good, and Barkley. And they just look like such a far cry from that team who staved off relegation, finished 17th last campaign. And obviously, they've got a star man in Jack Grealish. And would you agree with me on Villa, or is that perhaps, you know, outlandish?
I think I do agree with you on Villa. I think they'd be the ones that I'd highlight as well, just because from an FPL point of view, it's absolute dreamland, isn't it, to have viable assets in the 4.5 million goalkeeper defender category, the 5 to 6 million striker category, and also a mid-price midfielder who's just a talisman beyond compare. Them, we're both going to probably speak about Grealish a little bit later on, but yeah, I mean, in terms of the underlying stats for the team, pretty good. And as Watkins said at the end of the last game, we can beat pretty much anybody. And that is just a really interesting sort of wild card, dark horse to throw into the mix, really, of FPL. Just because if all the big teams are smashing it, it does become rather boring. So it's really cool to have options across the spectrum. And, you know, I definitely agree with Villa. I think you said a lot of the points that I just regurgitate, so I'm not going to say them again. There are a few other kind of teams around, I guess, to mention. Liverpool, second for XG for open play, the most goal attempts, most shots in the box, second big chances to Spurs. They could be back, at least in front of goal. But I did want to highlight Chelsea from an attacking sense, in an FPL prism, of course. I've still got reservations about Lampard as a tactical coach. I don't know whether he's more of a Redknapp, up and atom sort of fella. But they've created eight big chances and scored seven, and scored 10 goals in the last four, one less than the leader Southampton. And they're a very exciting team to watch. They've had the chance once every 7.4 minutes. And they've got a really nice mid-priced team from an FPL perspective as well. It reminds me of kind of Spurs' big three back in the day, Ali, Eriksen and Kane, and they're all affordable in all the many of our teams. Of the valid going concerns of their team, you've obviously got Werner at the top, but then you've got likes of Havertz, Pulisic, Ziyech, Abraham, and in defence, you've got Chilwell, Zuma, and potentially Reece James and Mendy, who are all valid members of your team who could be kind of bedrock sort of characters. So I really like them, and I think that their stats seem to show that they are kind of reaching that sort of level of being a very, very strong team overall again. And last year, I think they were kind of a team that flitted in and out of the sorts of teams we were looking at. Whereas I think this year, they could well become one of those teams that form kind of a cornerstone of our sides. And I think Chilwell was going to be a hygiene factor for many going forward, especially with TAA being out. I think the pop to Chilwell is very, very clear. And someone like Ziyech, who I'll mention later, is just very, very big. And Werner too. One other thing too, I was shocked to see Man United featuring well in the data recently. From the last four, they've created the chance every 6.1 minutes, the best. They've had the most shots, but not a lot of them are in the box. The culprit of this is Bruno Fernandes, who's doing the Arc Ericsson again. He's had lots of long shots. He's had 15 shots over the last four, only a third of them in the box. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm not too sure on the Manchester United shout out at the end of there, but obviously Bruno, he's a particularly good player, and he's definitely one that we're looking at there. I think, yeah, all very valid points. There's quite a few teams that, you know, impressing. Obviously, you mentioned Southampton briefly in terms of their league position as well. There's another team that are doing very, very well and look very defensively solid, as well as Che Adams, who was nominated for Player of the Month. So worth calling him out as well. The old Shea train, which you're jumping off, I think. Yeah. But anyway, shall we move on to the three top performance so far? When we did this last, we each gave three top performers. So Anthony, he gave Kane, Calvert-Lewin and Jorginho, which is a bit of a random one at the end there.
Penalties, I think.
Because of the penalty factor. Yeah. So to be honest, mine, I gave Kane and Salah, but I also gave Neil Maupay, which we'll move on quickly about as well. and yours were a little bit more reasonable in terms of who you picked. I guess it was Kane, Wilson and James. So in terms of the three top performers for me so far now, I think it's probably a lot clearer that it's Kane, Son and Grealish, and one of those is my star man as well. What about yourself, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, it's Kane, Bamford and I've got Grealish as well, and the star performer, I think, is actually Grealish now. But I think just to start with Kane and Spurs, because obviously we're now, and we'll definitely get onto this in the questions later on, we're moving into a period where Spurs have had their sort of purple patch and now the fixture is stiffening considerably. But Kane in particular, his stats have dropped off, but you know, you've still mentioned him as being the top scorer over the last four game weeks with 36 points. But tough games like Burnley and West Brom have taken their toll on his data. He's a third down on XG and he's half his XA as his average position has deepened. But you know, he's still incontrovertibly, you know, the revelation of the year, and he is very much back. It's just the case that he is also one of those players who may have gone on my wild card to afford other things. What do you think about the Spurs guys, Nick? I have no Spurs on my wild card.
You know, they are the form players, really. I know that the last couple of performances a bit quieter than what we saw against Southampton, Manchester United, but the main thing from a Spurs fan perspective is we picked up the 3 points. So, you know, I'm still pretty happy. And as far as I'm concerned with Kane, he is the star man for me. I think, you know, just in terms of his last 14 starts in the Premier League, he's had 17 goals and 10 assists, which is just ridiculous. Obviously not all this season, but in terms of this season, it's been 8 assists and 7 goals, which is just basically averaging 2 attacking returns a game. And obviously the first game wasn't too good either way, blanks, but since then it's been fantastic. And I think, you know, when we talk about Harry Kane, he has been subject to a little bit of criticism perhaps on the pod over the last couple of seasons. mainly because he's been dropping back. He's not always been playing as a number 9. It's not always his fault as well. It's been kind of stuff like lack of service. You know, had been doing pretty well defensively quite often. But, you know, it's been different this season, and his link-up play with Son has been excellent. He's added assists to his game, which we didn't have before, and the 8 assists he's got so far this season is more than he's had any campaign before, and we're only on week 8. In terms of his goal threat, no one comes close. 38 goal attempts is 9 more than any other forward, 4 more than Mo Salah as well, and 15 of which have been on target, which makes it a chance every 18.8 minutes. So as I said, goal threat is there, chances created, fantastic. 18 chances created so far, which is twice as many as any other forward, 8 of which have been big chances, so 4 times the amount than any other forward has managed, and more than any other midfielder as well. So he really has been sort of good money and deserving of those assists. So for me, Kane is the star man.
I get that. I looked over the last four game weeks though, and I came up with the other guy that I mentioned, Bamford. So, I mean, this is probably emblematic of the fact that we always try to look beyond our own teams. Neither of us own Bamford, and we've obviously widely derided Paddy over the last few years. But we've got to give Bamford some love, Nick. We really do. Over the last four, he's had more shots in the box than any other player. He's had more big chances than any other player. But he's not the most accurate. He's missed six big chances so far this season. But he's had more big chances and more shots in the box than any other forward over the last four, so more than Kane has. And he's actually equal to Salah on that metric. And bearing in mind the VAR goals, wow, what a bargain those, like, you know, Tom Freeman, who was on the wire recently, got him at for 5.5 at the start of the season. It's one of those that in hindsight we all should have owned at 5.5. It leads as well are creating chances at a ridiculous frequency at the moment, and they have had Wolves, Villa, Leicester and Palace in the last four, none of which you point at as being offensively easy game. I think Paddy's definitely worth noting just because of his dominance in the underlying stats, and that's translating into points as well, isn't it, for him? I don't think at the start of the season, if you'd have asked me, I'd have been able to guess that Paddy would be performing as well as he is at the moment. He's actually just outside the top five, one point off Jamie Vardy, which is, yeah, I would not have guessed that basically at the start of the season. So I think it's time we give the Bammy some love.
Yeah, he's another one that's been derided on the pod in the past. So, you know,
it's like contrition for us.
Coming up to bite us all. Oh, Ziyech is doing well, Bamford, Kane, it's like, whatever, but you know, we're willing to, you know, change our minds whenever we need to, and adapt with the times, which is very important. And Bamford, yeah, he's had an excellent start this season. But I think, I don't know, for me, I kind of went for Son. I think in terms of the sort of the other player alongside, I think Grealish, who are obviously both in agreement on. I think Son and Kane, they just come as a pair. They've just both been the fulcrum of the Spurs attack, and he's really benefited from Kane's creativity in this season. I think he's just really come to his own, proved that he is a world-class performer and world-class footballer. He's well on the way to hit that 200 points target, and just, I mean, as a fan, maybe I'm biased, but he's just been an absolute joy to watch with some of his performances, including that four-goal rout against Southampton. So, yeah, I'm pretty sad that I'm actually going to be selling him because of the fixture shift, but I think he is very deserving of being called out as one of the top performers of the season. And yeah, in terms of point, it's translated into points as well. It's worth highlighting. He's second in the game, just six now behind Kane. Before this game week, it was even on us.
Yeah, no, it's seeing him being sold again has just given me a shiver down my spine, just because you know what happens next. But there you go. I just want to just mention Grealish quickly as well. He's actually my star, so Kane was yours. Grealish is mine. He's third for shots in the box, has had four big chances and scored three. He's also second for chances created, six for big chances created, and has six assists in the last six. 49 points scored, second to Kane. Halls like that 15 points 2 weeks ago are on the horizon, I'm sure. His fixtures from here till Christmas are really, really kind. In every game, it seemed like he's had loads of near misses, so I can think of two shots cleared off in different games recently, for instance, off the top of my head. He's just that sort of all-rounder type moment, getting the goals, getting also being involved in the assists that we love in FPL, because there are so many points avenues. I just wish that he did have penalties. Don't know between him and Watkins yet, but he really does it like sort of the Brummy Hazard at the moment, especially given the ludicrously cheap price. It's just talisman theory in action, which I always love to see, which is why initially I think last time I did Wilson, because he was the talisman sort of representative. But yeah, Grealish is just one of those players that I think is just a must-have, especially over the upcoming period. And those who go without probably will get kind of the odd 15 points of ram down their throat, unfortunately. So definitely worth getting in if you don't have them.
Yeah, 100% agreed. I think he's going to be one of those ones where we look back at the beginning of the season and say, was he only 7 million? You know, he looks like he could be the bargain of the season, so to speak. And I think he's only also worth highlighting, he's only actually played 7 game weeks, not 8. So the fact that he's sort of leading all of these metrics, having only played 7 games compared to 8, is very impressive. Yeah, so he's only sort of behind Salah for goal attempts and penalty box touches. So he's clearly getting into the right positions. As you said, he could have had so many more points than what he's actually got so far. But yeah, I mean, last season we saw glimpses of it. We were second at the end of the season for chances created behind KDB. But I think the fact that he's now got a decent player that can bury his chances in Watkins rather than playing alongside likes of Samata or Wesley is massive for his game. And you know, he's even got, you know, likes of Barkley, he's acting like a foil, except when he's offside and blocking the keeper's line of sight. But, you know, generally, yeah. McGinn McGinn being fit, all very important factors in Grealish's performance this season.
Cool. Well, it sounds like we kind of agree on Grealish and Kane. It's just a case of Son versus Bamford for the final slot. But yeah, no, broadly, it kind of sounds like we're in agreement there. Let's move on from there then and talk about the surprise so far. So back 4 weeks ago, we all said slightly different things. I said West Ham were pretty good and Arsenal were absolutely terrible. You said Aston Villa were very, very good. And you also highlighted, presently, Nick, that Grealish was a fantastic bargain at 7 million. So, yeah, he must have got the crystal ball out back then. And Anthony said there were more mistakes, teams were leggy, and there were loads of penalties, and he didn't expect that. Just to say as well that penalties, over the last 14 game weeks, there have been 15. There were 25 in the first four game weeks, so there's definitely been a drop-off. Vardy's had the most. You seem very prescient with Villa, Nick. But what surprises now hit you between the eyes?
Well, actually, I felt like, because I covered Villa earlier, I was going to take away what Anthony said about penalties that you've covered already. I think that has been one of the surprises of the season. I know it's dropped off a little bit, but we did see it this particular game week that the handball rules is still clearly impacting games with Wolves and Liverpool giving away penalties. I did feel a little bit of schadenfreude, at least in terms of seeing KDB and Vardy miss those penalties this weekend. It was the second penalty in the Leicester game that he missed. But yeah, I feel like it's just something that we didn't really call out before the season began, something that wasn't on the radar. Penalties, obviously, we captured it and had a big pod about it straight away as soon as, you know, the first week hit and we saw how many were being given away. But still, I feel like it's just such a change in our thinking that, you know, it's so important to target those penalty takers in our team, you know, like Vardy, like Bruno. The fact that Werner now being on penalties for Chelsea is almost huge as well in terms of looking at him as an FPL asset. And I feel like perhaps that is certainly one of the surprises of the year, perhaps the surprise.
Cool, no, fair enough. I think the big surprise for me is quite kind of timely for now and timely for me being on the wild card. But it's from an FPL point of view, how bunched up managers are. And it's amazing how one good week can propel you really up the ranking so far at the moment and how many managers seem to be struggling too. So I'm 1.6 million, but I'm only kind of, you know, 15 points from 1 million. And in the hub contributor league, for example, I'm in that. I'm in 33rd, but I'm only 30 points off the top 10. I turned to our friend FPL Review for help, and you know, he tweeted earlier on today that the median elite 1,000 manager, so the managers who end up in kind of a very good position, their ranked median rank is 940k. So about 1 million is meant to be all right for relatively obsessed managers. And I spoke to him as well, and he managed to pop me a distribution chart for this year versus last year at this time. I'm not going to go into a full-on sort of COVID briefing-esque explanation of the data. But basically, last year's chart was far more steep than this year. This year kind of is very, very flat and averages have been fairly high, but there's one hell of a lot of bunching basically between the 500k and the 2 million mark. But the reality is that at the moment, we have got a situation where you've got kind of, you know, the top 10k, the top 15k have got a bit of a lead, but there are a whole glut of managers stuck between 2 million and 500k. And it's just, you know, the case of having a couple of decent great game weeks and you're away. I can't remember us being this bunch this late into the season as well. So, yeah, definitely something that came to mind as being a bit of a surprise, or at least had an inkling that was a surprise. And it was a good to get that sort of proven through evidence. Right, and then the final thing was a flop so far. So I think we all agreed on defences last time. You know, the likes of AWB and Doz, Matt D early on, and they've been joined by, you know, the likes of Liverpool defenders. So Robbo and Trent, 52 points in total. Robbo 31, Trent 21. 10 players have outscored both their combined score individually. Trent in particular, one return in 8 games. And despite the good underlying data and the hope that I get something tomorrow, the basic truth is I should have gotten rid of Trent a long, long time ago. And the likes of, you know, Robbo's doing better, but the likes of James Justin, Tyrone Mings and Yannick Vestergaard are all outscoring him. The fixtures are turning for them, but I will probably go without for the time being. I like the fact they're quite illiquid assets as well. What I mean by that is that their price isn't going to move up or down very much because of how expensive they are. But we may indeed see a big fall in Trent soon. So I guess, you know, I can see why we did nominate defences. A couple of things just to mention here, which I think is quite a nice curiosity. One is that the FPL asked the question, are West Brom and Fulham still the whipping boys? The answer is probably no, actually. They've both really stopped the leakage. So between game weeks 1 and 4, West Brom conceded 13 goals, Fulham conceded 11. And in the last 4, they've only conceded 4 each, equal with the likes of Tottenham and Chelsea. So their defence is looking considerably tighter, but you're still, you know, not really getting the premium kind of returns from Liverpool at the moment, certainly. City are probably looking a little bit better. Chelsea are looking a little bit better as well. But my actual flop, just to say, is Man City's attack. They've scored 10 goals now, and they've got an XG of 9.31. So they're overperforming with that 10 they've scored. And they're averaging a little over 1 goal per game. Something seriously wrong there. And that would be, if I said to someone pre-game week 1, that's how City would be after game week 8, they'd think I was mad. That's just, you know, that would have been unthinkable in pre-season that City were so blunted going forward. But that's the case. And yeah, it's especially because I'm wildcarding, hoping to look at those fixtures from game week 10 onwards. It's definitely one that's given me pause for thought. And I've got some strategic thinking to do around if or when and how I get City players in, because I certainly am not going to be going with any apart from Cancelo to begin with. What do you think, Nick, in terms of the flop?
Yeah, I think City is an interesting pick. But yeah, I think certainly there's going to be a little bit of a fixture shift there with sort of Burnley and Fulham at home after the Spurs game. So it's only one to look at. I think you mentioned defenders last time, and I think there has been a little bit more defensive solidity, as you mentioned, sort of 23 clean sheets in game week 5 to 8. So a little bit of a rise on the 17 beforehand. But we've seen the likes of Chelsea, City showing a lot more composure at the back, Burnley, West Ham, Southampton, like those teams starting to pick up a stream of clean sheets as well. Liverpool defence still very disappointing. Trent's been a huge disappointment generally, and you know, attacking wise, just the one assist so far as well. So it's not just defensively for Trent, it's been attacking returns. He picked up 15 assists and 4 goals last season, so he's well off that. I actually thought I'd highlight one of your men though, Arsenal forwards, and Aubameyang has been a huge flop this season. So there was a lot of hype around his reclassification as midfielder, having scored 22 goals over the past 2 seasons, now being a midfielder and getting more points. But just the 2 goals and 1 assist, and one of those has been a penalty, way below the standards we would have expected from him. I mean, in terms of his non-pen XG over the whole of the season, it's actually just 0.58, 0.31 coming in that opening game against Fulham. So since then, it's been 0.27. So really, really poor stats. Many, many players much higher than that. Harry Kane, for instance, you said was a bit quiet in that West Brom game, actually managed 0.69 in that game alone. So yeah. Aubameyang's well off the pace.
Oh, God, no, absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? I think it's just the case of how it's been deployed, as you've alluded to, and it's just one of those things that pre-season we always got so amped up about talisman theory, and the fact that it really points to Aubameyang being just this monster, and it's just not as come to fruition, has it? And not having an XG of above 3 at this point, it's just really humiliating game this weekend, and I'm not going to lurch into Arsenal-led anger, but yeah, no, probably the worst performance I've seen under Arteta, or at least in highlights. I wasn't going to pay for the pay-per-view. Cool. All right. So to sum up where we are now, then, after game week 8, we now think the team of the season so far has been the villains, Aston Villa, shock horror. And in terms of players, Grealish features heavily for both of us, does Harry Kane on our kind of list of players so far, with Son and Bamford, a split between the two of us. Surprise, Pens and Bunching with our managers, that is, and flop, the City attack and the Arsenal attack, I suppose, but principally the big man. How do you think it's going to evolve, Nick? I guess we're going to come back and look at this again in a few months' time, maybe, you know, after the Christmas period. But, I mean, do you think there's any players who are kind of high in mind? I guess we'll probably maybe come on some Insta questions anyway. But, I mean, do you think the trend's going to continue, or do you reckon we're going to see kind of a veering off into different things with the fixtures changing?
I certainly think when we talked about the flops just then, the likes of the City forwards, they're certainly going to come into their own in the coming weeks. Like, it's so unusual for them to be, you know, this this quiet, and I'm relatively confident we're going to see lots of goals from Manchester City this season. I think the Liverpool defence will tighten up, and I'm sure Aubameyang will also start scoring. I feel like some of the trends you've highlighted, though, I'm hoping anyway, because he's in my team, but like I think like the likes of Jack Grealish and Aston Villa are going to have really good seasons, and same with Kane. I feel like hopefully he can keep his form up as long as he stays fit. And, you know, generally, you're going to see lots more penalties. That's going to be a common theme over the course of the season. And eventually, you mentioned us all being bunched up. Eventually, we're all going to be spread out. But, you know, I'm not too sure what the root cause is there. Perhaps it's a template forming quite early. I don't know.
Broadly agree with that. I'm sure that, you know, we're going to keep City down for long. And, you know, with the turn in fixtures for Liverpool as well, I'm sure those creative fullbacks for Liverpool are going to come back into their own. But yeah, no, definitely been an interesting sort of first 8 weeks, that's for sure. I'm not sure I'd have been sitting here nominating Patrick Bamford as being one of the players of the season so far. If you'd asked me at pre-season, that is for definite. Cool, let's take a break there and move on to the correspondence / Q&A.
Who got the assist? So we're back, and it's time to catch up with the Who Got the Assist mini league. And if you want to join the league, the code is CPSUOF. So quick update on the top five. New entry in the top five is Wallace Clark with the Ace team. He got a very good score this week of 79 points. So well done, Wallace. In fourth, it's David Izzet with Hest Wham Untied. In third, it's Borisov Joksimovic, and I'm not going to try and pronounce his team name. This time he got 67 points. In second, it's Graham Sessoms with HK10 for Golden Boot, 62 points. But number one this week is Zakaria Mokroy with Zaki Team 2. And yeah, 92 points for him, which is absolutely huge score. So well done, mate. Fernandez, 17-pointer. Salah, 9.
Oh, goodbyes.
Bamford, I think pretty much everyone in his team returned, apart from Lascelles, who apparently he's got for 1-pointer, played him over Suchek. So could have got the 100
could
points.
Could have been a monster.
Also got Nick Pope in goal, which is quite interesting. 9-pointer there. So yeah, well done. And let's move on to the next section.
Yeah, well done, everybody. All right, let's move on to the correspondence. This is Anthony's favourite bit, which is basically asking you to send in your rants, pet theories, poems, questions for analysis, arguments with something that we've said, debate points in to our email inbox, which is whogotthisist@gmail.com. Writing emails to be read out, debated, and looked at length here on the very podcast. Anthony lives for this section, so yeah, do make him happy and send us emails in whogotresist@gmail.com. But he will be back next week to no doubt spearhead the section once more. This week, the correspondence comes from our good friend FPL Tips Harry, and he writes the following: "Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for your continued work on the pods. My weekly staple that even when busy, I make sure to make time for. Thank you. That's very kind of you, Harry. My question to you is this. Where do you think we should be looking in terms of defences? It feels like there's either good form but bad long-term fixtures, or bad form with good fixtures. I've played my wild card already, so I'm looking for defences for the long term, between now and the end of the year perhaps. Who have been the most reliable teams to target, and who have been a flash in the pan? Thanks again, Harry, aka FPL Tips, with a Z, not S." Cool. All right. So, I mean, I think defence has definitely been one of those this year that has come under a bit of focus, a bit of scrutiny, Nick, just because it's not been entirely clear. I mean, we all kind of had a Liverpool defender nailed in at the start of the year. We all had kind of, you know, a few cheap players kind of around them or one of them nailed in at the start of the year. But it's definitely felt a bit sort of up in the air, hasn't it? It's definitely felt like a very unsettled sort of part of the team. But do you think now we're beginning to see sort of players emerge that do seem they're going to be settled, and, you know, teams emerging at least that look like they're going to be teams worth owning? You know, for example, Villa, as I've mentioned, and the likes of Chilwell with a Chelsea defence. You've got Zouma, of course. I mean, those are two defences that look like they're going to end up being hygiene to cover, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I'm less negative about the defence compared to where I was at in game week 4, and as you heard from the earlier section, but it might be because this particular week I got 3 clean sheets out of 4, so I was quite happy about that. I think, you know, in terms of the teams, big at the back sort of isn't really viable right now based on Liverpool defences performances, but there's certainly space for, you know, a premium defender in your team. The likes of Ben Chilwell, obviously he's one that's caught many a manager's eye, and Chelsea perhaps are the team to firstly call out. You talked about them and their attack a little bit, but the back four looks pretty clear now compared to perhaps at the beginning of the season. We didn't really know who was going to start week in, week out, but right now it looks like Thiago Silva and Zouma are sort of nailed in terms of the centre backs, and Reece James seems to be nailing down that right back slot as well ahead of Azpilicueta, at least over the last couple of game weeks. And all of them carry some attacking threat as well, which as managers we like to see. So the defence has certainly been shored up in terms of getting those clean sheets recently in the Champions League and the Premier League. But also those defenders all have attacking threat. Zouma's got 3 goals to his name. We saw Silva score this week, and Chilwell, and James as well, or Rames, if we're going to follow the Portman. But Rames also got a goal and assist in week one that carries a bit of a free kick threat and creating lots of crosses. So I do like Chelsea from a defensive standpoint. I think certainly they're worth covering. You know, they're starting to leave that patch of really good fixtures, but you know, Newcastle away up next, potentially another chance for a clean sheet there. So yeah, I think Chelsea perhaps the main one. Otherwise you've got Man City, you know, I think their defensive shape is also starting to form. Diaz and Laporte look like the new partnership. And Cancelo is the one I'm really interested in, actually, as an FPL option, sort of 5.4 million. And after Spurs, they've got a great run of fixtures, haven't they? Burnley at home, Fulham at home. You know, they've United. Got United and then West Brom. So, you know, they've got some really nice games coming up. So I think City and Chelsea lead the line. I think, you know, I've got some other teams as well. Leicester look good. I think Fofana, who's been fast-tracked in the team, was very impressive at the weekend. Justin's proved himself to be a decent asset. And some of the other cheaper teams, you've got Southampton, Brighton, West Ham, all looking really good as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree more, really, on the fact that Liverpool defenders have in their sort of wake, Chilwell and Cancelo are the two that I've got on my wild cards. Chilwell, 41 points. If you watch him play, he's so advanced getting into those goal-scoring positions. He's actually 5th for shots per 90 in the Chelsea team. And one observation as well from watching him this weekend was that Reece James and Ziyech are both creators on the other side. They're crossers. So Chilwell and whoever's on that wing, it was Werner, I think, this weekend, are the ones benefiting from that. They're getting in to those and getting some service. Cancelo as well. So there's a question from FPL Physio on Cancelo. He's looking very decent. He's created the second most chances for Man City this season after Kevin De Bruyne. Incredible, huh? And the bonus system likes him too. He's picked up 6 bonus from his 4 starts, and he seems nailed. He's played 90 minutes times 4. Despite playing on the wrong side, given what foot he uses. Anyway, I've been speaking a lot to my friend Karam, who you may know, Karam Tizer, who's also on Wildcard. And, you know, the approach to defence seems to be very, very similar between the two of us. I'm sure I've seen a few other Wildcards out there, and it seems to be kind of the formula is this. So, keeper, boring, fixtures. That means Martinez. He just looks like a hygiene pick now, unfortunately. I did have McCarthy for a while, but Martinez, I've had to pay 0.3 million more, but that's just a set and forget, really, isn't it? The two premiums, like I mentioned. And then you kind of hit into what do you do next. And Nick, you mentioned a few really good sort of teams there, you know, like Brighton, like Southampton, whatever. My approach is going to be to have kind of 3 little ones who are going to rotate, basically. Maybe Kilman is the, you know, the Aaron Bissaka of Lundstrand this year. I regret not getting him at 4 million. But it's all about fixtures for me and those sort of cheap sort of slots. So unless they're truly exceptional in that bracket and Mertrin played every game and there's something exciting like Lamptey, I'm just going to play it by the fixture. So at the moment, I've got very, very unsexy players in there. Likes of Jamal Lewis, of Adam Webster, as mentioned. Yeah, they're not the best, but they kind of fit quite nicely into just being the 11th man every week. And plus, they all play 90 minutes. So the great thing about that is that if I do have, you know, my bench decimated by COVID, random kind of injuries, rest, coming up to Christmas as well, I've got a fully stocked bench of pretty cheap players who I'm, you know, at least I'm going to get 2 points or 1 or 2 points out of them. And at least I know they're going to play. It's not very exciting, but the fact is that because I've got Chilwell and Cancelo, I've got 2 very good sort of defenders, plus Martinez and goals. So 3 out of 4 of the defence is pretty decent every week. The other one has a good fixture every week, so hopefully that makes them fairly good, and that means I can push all the money forward to a forward team that I've got. So yeah, I mean, we've mentioned a few teams there, mentioned them maybe a strategy to be looking at, and I think that it sounds like Nick, you're looking at Cancelo as well, and he could be kind of the next sort of big thing in defence. But I mean, yeah, I guess to answer kind of Harry's question directly, defence for the long term would be probably Man City. And I think that, you know, despite the fact their offence has been a bit poor, the numbers do seem to stack that their defence has been very, very good. So they've got the longest interval between chances, for example, conceded, which just kind of shows that their keep ball, as always, has a very positive effect at the back. And you know, even if you do get Cancelo, you've got the upside. But even if you do pay 5.5 million for Diaz, you've kind of got the Edison-esque sort of thing where you're paying 5.5 million for probably about 50% chance for clean sheet every now and again. And given how good the fixtures are, after Spurs, you know, Burnley, Fulham, Man United, West Brom, Southampton, Newcastle, so almost all the way up to Boxing Day, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hugely winnable games to City, and potentially 5 clean sheets as well. So that could be 30 points off the bat if you do get a defender in for that. So definitely worth doing, especially because Cancelo at the time recording is 5.4. Yeah, very, very good. Cool. Well, hopefully that sort of answers the question. We're back next week with more correspondence. As mentioned, get them in, whogottheassist@gmail.com, and make Anthony squeal with joy. Right, let's move on to the Q&A, Nick.
Cool. Yep, so the first question is about the Spurs sell-off. So we had loads of questions on this one this week, like some Joe Bruin, FPL Physio, FPL Latics, FPL CG, Cy Hizen, Gear Snoop, Outdoor RC, Jamie Thorpe, and Eamon Abs, amongst others, all asking us something pretty similar, and that was, is it now time to sell Son or Kane, and or Kane? And if not both at once, who goes first? So so I'm planning on moving Son out, actually. I think it's just, it is the fixture shift ultimately that's kind of driven this. You know, as we said earlier on the pod, they got City, Chelsea, Arsenal up next, then it's Crystal Palace, and then it's Liverpool. So really, really challenging next five. And they are quite expensive assets, even though they've been excellent. I'm not sure about owning both. I think Son, he was a bit quieter the last couple of games, didn't really get involved in the West Brom game. But I think, you know, he did seem quiet in Burnley, Brighton, West Brom. There is a question mark in regards to his actual style, if 10, because those sort of teams, they were very, very defensive. They had 10 men behind the ball. I kind of watched patches of the match. It's very frustrating to watch, you know, West Brom with sort of about 6 championship defenders all kind of lining up, never sort of leaving the halfway line, compared to Southampton, who got consistently exposed. And I think perhaps, you know, you could see Son returning those games if likes of City or Arsenal try and play too much of a high line, they could get exposed. But I don't know. I'm not willing to risk it. I think I really want Bruno, so Son's going to leave my team for Bruno. I don't feel that same rush to sell Kane. At least I'm not, certainly not going to do it on a hit, because I've only got one FT. So that would be crazy as far as I'm concerned. I think Kane, as I said, he's been the star of the season for me. So I'm not going to rush to sell him. Though I do like the idea potentially of swapping him out for Vardy, because Leicester have Fulham at home in game week 10, Sheffield United, Brighton. So, you know, I could do a Kane to Vardy move perhaps in a week's time. But yeah, it does feel a bit odd talking about these guys. They're the stars of the season. They've been the best players. You know, they've exceeded expectations. Let's get rid. You know, it does seem a bit counterintuitive, but I feel like, you know, there's a few other teams, a few other players. I didn't mention Man City just then, just coming into the fore, and we've got to fund them somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're inevitably going to hear the "but he'll punish you" thing said to people who are selling. And yeah, I'm sure they will. I think that, you know, this is one of the sort of base points we hear every year. And I guess what I'm betting will happen is that me making my moves to sell both of them, which is what I've done, is going to outperform that sort of status quo, because there's going to be so many managers who are just too scared, or, you know, feel sentimentally that these players have done very well for them, so I'm going to keep hold of them no matter what. But hopefully there's going to be an advantage for me there that I can exploit. I would have been selling Son for Bruno anyway, mirroring Nick's move, but I am worried about losing Kane. But I, you know, I've pushed the button already. It's already happened. I'm just trying to be aggressive on this kind of wild card and reshape my squad. I haven't been badly at all, of course, but as Nick alluded to, I'm thinking / hoping they're beginning to drop off a bit, and the upcoming games, City, Arsenal, Chelsea, Palace, Liverpool, all speak to that sort of thing when Nick mentioned that it's they're not games which quite suit Son. I think maybe the City game, maybe Liverpool game, but the ones in the middle, they're all going to be quite cagey games, I think. I'm sure they're going to score. I'm sure there'll be chances for them to score. I'm sure they will score. But I don't think they'll be as potent to hold as the others I've got coming in. So, for example, Bruno. For example, I've replaced Kane with Vardy, who has got Liverpool, Fulham, Sheffield United, Brighton, and I'm not worried about fielding Vardy for a second against Liverpool, for example. They may well punish me, and they obviously have been the stars of the season so far, but I'm trying to be kind of aggressive, and with that aggression comes making template-led moves and trying to kind of be ruthless, cut out the sentiment and go for it. I can see why you'd hold. I think we've got to give voice to that. I know we've both kind of said, oh yeah, we'll move on the other. But there's obviously some downside protection in keeping at least one of them, because as Nick said earlier on, they come as a pair. So if one scores, the other one's likely to assist. It's just whether the volume is going to match teams who have got better fixtures, like the guys I've mentioned. There's also Man City as well. So it is a tough one. We always have a tough moment like this at the start of every season when, you know, the first big bandwagon of the year falls. What happens next? There's going to be some sort of unruly transition. There will be kind of Wilson and Fraser-esque bandwagon reprisals every now and again when the dead teams love it. But I think on balance, it probably is the right thing now to just kind of go with the fixtures and swing away from them. But yeah, I can see why if you're reluctant to get rid, that you wouldn't be getting rid. I think this kind of nicely links into the next question as well on season keepers. So Matt Francis asks if anyone is truly indispensable, and FPL Claret asks a question in the same vein. Are there any players you trust to be fixture proof? I think there's only one for me, and his name is Mohamed Salah. Nick, what about you?
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I think it's Salah, isn't it? I mean, we didn't mention him earlier as one of the stars of the season, but it's just almost because he's almost a victim of his own success. We're so used to him just being brilliant that it's not even worth highlighting. And, you know, he has been excellent this season so far, 67 points from his 8 games, which means that he would be on an average to break 300 points if he was to maintain that sort of performance from an FPL perspective. Since he joined Liverpool, he's rarely left my team, actually. It was only sort of last season that he wasn't as involved because I was kind of on Mane for various patches of the season. But I think certainly this season, I just he is the one player that I, you know, is fixture proof, and you know, never say never. He might get injured, he might really drop in form, but you know, he is the key man at the moment, at least.
Yeah, I think as I mentioned earlier on, just to reiterate as well, you can often find opportunity in managers' fear or reluctance to gamble. You know, people always kind of value what they've got rather than what they could have. So they'll be like, oh, well, you know, these guys have served me very, very well in the past. I don't want to get somebody else and take the risk of being caught out, basically. But you just got to judge it right. That's something I don't historically do well. So maybe don't listen to me and keep your Spurs assets. But I'll again be hoping to exploit an opportunity, chase that, you know, old-fashioned upside thing that late riser fella keeps talking about, and hoping it comes off me this time. But as well, you know, with fixture proofness, there are a few players in the past that are worth mentioning here. So the likes of, you know, Lampard and Drogba, Torres, for those people who go that far back, players who were fixture-proof. And you know, there are a few as well, like the Hazard and Aubameyang, who were fixture-proof in retrospect. So they were shoo-ins for 200-plus points per year, but fell prey to us as managers wanting predictability for the price they paid. But I guess many of us long for the days of, you know, when Robin van Persie for Arsenal scored in every single game, so you just leave the captaincy on him and get on with your life. I think the answer to this question basically is that there's probably not that many players we trust to be fixture-proof, and outside of Salah, I think that we probably both are not too sentimental about holding on to players, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think when we look at the stats, if you captain Salah all season, you find that he would have beaten your average for your captaincy. And I think that kind of reiterates that point, that where we sometimes as managers, whilst in some vein I've been guilty of this with Hazard before, you stick with these players hoping they'll come good. But certainly with Salah, in at least the last few seasons, you know, if you had stuck with him and you captained him week in, week out, you'd have done a lot better than most managers. So I think in that vein, he's the main man for me. But we'll move on to the next question about sell-off destination. So if we're selling, where do we go? Princess Shetty asked us if we should indeed be jumping on City, or is it a case that Ziyech, Grealish and James are better? Crate Digger pointed out that De Bruyne could lose penalties and become less potent. And Just Above Average FPL Podcast mentioned Bruno, who's 1 million less than the City penalty taker. He's the talisman and he's only 20% owned. We were pretty keen on Grealish, as you heard earlier on the pod. So perhaps he's one. If he's not in your team, you should certainly be looking at the City midfielders. It's an interesting one because as we said, I mean, I don't own any at the moment. I mean, they've just been pretty poor, haven't they? Like, so Foden's been in and out of the team. Like, Samara's been in and out of the team. I mean, Ferran Torres looks good, but he's also in and out of the team. There's only really two players you can trust for starts, and they're both very expensive. And that's, that's Sterling and De Bruyne, 11.5 million. And when you look at who you're going to have to sacrifice, is it Kane? Is it Salah? Does it prevent you from getting Bruno? I don't know. It's a really challenging one to see how you can fit them in. Is that when you're troubles on your wild card right now?
It's not. I'm leaving City at least for the short term. I'm probably going to do a controversial have 1 million in the bank strategy, so I can do big at the bank again. So I can do Bruno to Kevin De Bruyne or Sterling for the Burnley game potentially. But I mean, I watched that game and I've watched kind of City last few games. There's nothing there which excites me too much about them. I just don't believe at the moment that Kevin De Bruyne is worth 11.5, nor Raheem Sterling for that matter, especially how they're currently performing. And with Kevin De Bruyne, the only thing that's going to make me change that opinion is if I get FOMO because the ownership's so high that I've got to buy him in. I mean, I might have to if he starts performing, obviously, as a downside protection, but without penalties, as Craig Digger mentioned, if it's purely assists and the odd speculative finish, I don't see how he's ever going to be worth 11.5. Like, for the premium price, I want an explosive player I can regularly captain. And as we saw for our research the other week, you can find the thread on Twitter or you can listen to that pod. I don't feel like there's a case for him at the moment to be the captain. I think last season, 9.5 million was an absolute gift, and people still have that in their heads and think about De Bruyne. But he's £2 million more now, and we have to refrain how we think about him a little bit, because if he doesn't have that consistency of ticking over like Salah does. I mean, an assist is worth 5 points, 6 points if I keep a clean sheet. Salah gets a goal, that's 10 points, that's, you know, a double figure captaincy. There is a difference there in terms of what that money does for you. Of all the players who you can go for to replace the guys, I do want to call out, I mean, I think Grealish and Bruno are obvious ones, and I think I own both. I think Nick's going to own Bruno come next week. Well, I do want to mention Ziyech. I mean, we mentioned him earlier on, and Nick and Anthony in particular, actually got called out on social media recently for doubting the former Ajax wizard in pre-season. I never did, though. I said in pre-season I felt his strong underlying creativity would help, and so it's really proved knit them together over the last couple of weeks. So he's only played 190 minutes, 2.1 games, but in that time he's actually seventh for points scored over the last four. Pretty astonishing. Per 90, he's created four chances and two big chances, i.e. six chances of any type per 90 minutes. He's also second for XA of any player over the last four, having played two games. All right, they've had decent games, but it's an underlying indication of how good this guy could be. Because watching Chelsea before he came into the team, I think he was injured, wasn't he, in pre-season? They were so disordered, and it felt like something was kind of missing to knit them all together. And I think the Moroccan has been that sort of guy, very similar to what Bruno Fernandes did to United. But I mean, this guy is a very Ziyech, that is a kind of potential Kevin De Bruyne type in an attacking team, as no one else really has his skill set as well. I'd be assuming he's going to get a lot of starts. So I've got him. I think he's a very, very good pickup. And one thing's for sure, he won't be 8.1 million this year if he carries on like this. So definitely one that I'd be pointing to if you have Grealish and if you kind of already have Bruno and you're looking for something else, someone else to bring in. I do very, very much like Ziyech, and I'm glad to see that my suspicions about him pre-season have hopefully started to come true.
Yeah, certainly. I think he has looked really good, as I mentioned, in Market Force the last couple of weeks. I'm still on Zaha as well, who's another one probably worth highlighting, putting some excellent performances for Crystal Palace at 7.4 million. He's got 5 goals, 2 assists to his name in the 8 games. So that's nearly a return a game. And they've also got some good fixtures coming up, Burnley, Newcastle, West Brom. So don't forget the Palace talisman as well, worth highlighting, probably on penalties as well. So that's always helpful. But we'll move on to the next question. This is about the forgotten men. So FPL Oakwell, he asked us if there's any value in the forgotten men, like Richardson, Martial, Madison, Traore, St. Max and Aubameyang were the people that he highlighted specifically. All have been good picks, of course, in the recent past. All of them sort of been in and out of our teams, I guess, at various points over the last few seasons. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Martial and Richarlison, they're now back from their suspensions. And if you have a hole in your forward line, maybe you're looking to move the likes of Jimenez or Danny Ings on for some reason. They sort of fit that price point. I guess, you know, they're quite interesting. Perhaps you could look at Richarlison. I don't know if you thought about Richarlison over Calvert-Lewin to fill in that Everton slot. You know, he was the one you were more bullish on in the pre-season, saying, you know, he was going to return more than DCL, and he also was on penalties as well, as we saw in one of the games recently that he took the penalty. I think, you know, he could easily, he's an exceptionally talented footballer. Obviously, he got suspended, but, you know, he could easily be effective. And Martial as well also got suspended, much to your chagrin. Bit of bad luck there. But I think, for me, I think there's a couple others probably above those guys in the list right now, and that would be Werner and Jamie Vardy. So I would probably be looking at those guys if you can afford them over Martial and Richarlison. But I don't know what you're thinking there.
I've come to the conclusion that Richarlison makes Dominic Calvert-Lewin better. So I'm going to get Dominic Calvert-Lewin and admit defeat on that one. It's all over. I've written down pithy descriptions of these players in answer to this question, which I think are actually true on doing some evidence-based analysis. But Richarlison makes DCL better, as I mentioned. Martial, inconsistent. Can he be bothered? Gallic shrug. Traore, impact sub. St. Max, bleh. Aubameyang, wing, beep. And Madison, not quite sure. Because, you know, he hasn't really started very much, has he, recently? I mean, he's been starting on the bench. Yeah, and he's coming back from injury, but they've got very good fixtures coming. So I think of the players at FPL, Oakwell mentioned, he's the one who will probably be catching the eye, just because, I mean, he, if he is doing well, becomes integral to that to that attack. But I think there is one forgotten man who's not on that list who I would like to mention, as Timo Werner. He's also, you know, as we've kind of lauded Chelsea a little bit. But obviously, everyone jumped off the Werner wagon earlier on this season, just because, well, I think we can all probably guess why everyone jumped off the Werner wagon. It's just not, after a few kind of poor initial performances, people did jump off. And, you know, as we said pre-season from my FPL sojourn, he does miss a lot and he's very, very streaky. But if Chelsea do come together, he could realise some of the decent underlying numbers he's putting together. And you can imagine as well, regardless of whether he's filled on the wing, whether he's filled up front, that he's going to have sort of a consistency of starts. Although it's worth mentioning that Lampard did say that he was hoping he'd arrest him last week, but Pulisic got the nod. And he did score this week, but it was, by the time, very frustrating for owners. But he's one who could probably come back onto the radar, especially when Chelsea come into decent fixtures again. After the Spurs game in game week 10, they do embark on an okay little run. Overtakes in a game against Leeds, a game against Everton, who've got the weakest defence, as I mentioned earlier, Wolves and West Ham. And, you know, he could be a sneaky differential for some looking to capitalise on people's reluctance to go back to a player like that. But yeah, no, it's always worth looking at the forgotten men. And Nick, you do look at the falling stars every year, don't you? So, it's, you know, there is always merit in that.
Yeah, I think Werner is one of the players in my team at the beginning of the season. It's actually surprising how highly owned he is. So he's the fourth highest owned forward right now with 23.9% ownership. So only Bamford, Kane and Calvert-Lewin have higher ownership in terms of the forwards, but you have to wonder how many of those are actually dead teams. But he's certainly one of those players that's, even though he's not in your team, you kind of want him to do well in a funny sort of way. And I think now the fact that he's got penalties as well is certainly going to help his cause. And yeah, as you mentioned, he's probably going to, he could easily net 20 goals over the course of the season, be an excellent FPL asset. So we'll move on to
Transfers and captains. So do you want to go first here? Perhaps, as you said, you're wild carding. Who's going to be the captain?
Don't know.
Don't know.
Very exciting. Don't know who's going to be my team. I've got a fairly solid base for my team, but obviously that is pending the international break and what happens there. The captaincy will probably be between Bruno and Grealish, actually, against Brighton. I know Bruno's the obvious one, but you can imagine West Brom as we just lining up with 11 men behind the ball like we did against Spurs and just hoping for a 0-0 or a 1-0, and you just wonder whether the United have got the guile to unpick them. But if one man does, it's Bruno, or if another man does, it's Rashford falling over, so Bruno scores a penalty. So he's probably the logical captain, but I quite like the idea of shoving it on Grealish and seeing what happens. I could even do it on Calvert-Lewin, or maybe even Ziyech against Newcastle. Got loads of choices, lots of time to choose. And in terms of the wildcard team, I'm going to keep it to myself. I mean, I've given you a few indications on this pod of what I'm thinking of doing, but I'm not going to put it on Twitter or anything like that. I think I'm going to keep it to myself, obviously keep it in my little circle of trust, people that I trust their advice on. But I'm not going to kind of subject it to public scrutiny until it's a fait accompli. Yeah. I'm all for transparency and openness until it comes to my wild card, Nick. What about you?
Okay, so, as I said, I'm probably going to sell Son and bring in Bruno Fernandes. I've got a little bit of money already in the bank. I've got 1.5 million in the bank somehow, so can easily make that transfer without having to burn one and take a hit. So I've got 0.3 still in the bank as well if I did the move today. So
strong position.
So, yeah, I think it works really well, just that swap. So I think I'm going to do that. In terms of the armband, I was thinking, you know, I've kind of got it in Calvert-Lewin actually at the moment, but I don't think I'm going to stick with that. I'll probably end up just going for the safer pick, so to speak, of Bruno Fernandes. Shove it on him, back the midfielder. Last time I backed him, though, he did get 2 points last season, so hopefully he doesn't repeat that. But yeah, I think that's the way at least I'm leaning right now. Could always just play ultra safe and put on Salah. He's always an option as well, of course. Captain obvious, maybe.
Oh, yeah, maybe actually, yeah.
You know, standard pick there. But thanks everyone for listening. We were Who Got the Assist. Make sure to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. And we'll be back after the international break.
Yep, hopefully joined by the Hibernian tones of Anthony once more. In the meantime, hope this is you sum up the last 8 game weeks. No matter how it's gone for you, hopefully you've had fun and you're going to stick with it throughout the course of the season. Speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Social Podcast Network.